Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to another episode of Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And I am super excited about this episode today because I am being joined by one of my very dear friends. Of course, we're just virtual friends because we met in the Lyme community. And if you've followed me at all, you know that I'm very passionate about educating and advocating for Lyme disease and all the things that go along with it. And she has a very similar passion as well. And so I often tell people that there are many layers to healing from this journey, and we have to address them all. You know, killing is important, but detoxing is just as important, if not more important. And there's other things you need to address too, like parasites, your nervous system, blocked trauma, emotions, and mold. And mold is so oftentimes the missing piece to the puzzle. And so my friend today is such an advocate for mold. And I truly call her the mold queen. I know it's not necessarily a flashy title, but she has truly done some deep dives into everything surrounding this because it was part of her personal journey. So I personally did not ever deal with mold, thank goodness, because it is not a fun thing. And so I don't know a lot about it. So I always love chatting with her and learning more. So I am so excited to welcome you to the show, Andy. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, my friend, it's very nice to be here and see you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So just for the listeners, if we can we kind of just dive into, you know, just a short, brief stint of your journey? I know that's hard to do, right? Because you've had quite the journey. But I want to, you know, just give a little bit of background about you. And if we can maybe talk about, like, what is mold? What's a mycotoxin, right? Like the differences, how do we test our homes the best, our bodies the best? What do we do if we are living in mold and our belongings are there? Are they gone or do we throw them away? I mean, there's so many different things surrounding what we should do. Is all mold toxic? Is there safe mold? And so hopefully we can cram all of this into this episode because there's so much that I want to touch on. So I'm excited. So if you can just share a brief story about your kind of your journey.
You got it. So my journey starts back in October of 2017. I bought my first house. And after moving into the house, I became very sick. After about 2 years, I was mostly bedbound. Really persistent migraines, neurological things, just a myriad of symptoms. End of 2019, beginning of 2020, I was diagnosed with Lyme disease, Bartonella babesia, and I underwent an herbal protocol with a functional medicine doctor, out of pocket, of course. I treated with that doctor for about a year. And I unfortunately did not make any improvement. And I followed this doctor's protocol to a T and then plus some. And during the time of diving into the rabbit hole that is Lyme, I read about the Lyme and mold connection. And I had also had a friend online that was reaching out to me and says, you know, you're not getting better from Lyme because you're living in mold. And I said, huh, okay, thanks. But no, I'm not.
And is that sometimes always, I don't know if I've ever really thought about this, but when you say, are you living in mold? Do people feel offensive? Like, I'm not a dirty person. I don't live in a dirty house. I don't have mold. I don't know. Sometimes that just kind of pops into my thoughts.
So yes, it is very stigmatized. I personally wasn't offended, but I'm not terribly easily offended. But we didn't have any known water damage. I keep a very clean home. I didn't have any musty odors, no water events. And the home that we bought, my mom, who's been a realtor for many years, had sold it to us or helped us, you know, get into it. So I really didn't think it was, you know, a part of the journey. But people do. People are very, I don't know, mold is a taboo topic, and which is really unfortunate because Lyme disease is so isolating. People just don't understand it. The effects are not appreciated like they should be. And mold is much the same. And people would say, well, you're sick from Lyme and mold. And well, that's weird, you know. And
yeah.
I need to move on. So I did not know I was living in mold, but I was not offended by the question. We ran out of money and I had just not improved. And we were kind of going through this treatment because I wasn't working at the time. I was unable to work for about 2 years, and we're not a one income family. We have a lot of love in our home, not a ton of money. And so our hope is that I would, you know, really get back to health and then hit the ground running and make up for lost time. Cause we were putting, you know, doctor visits and supplements on credit cards, and I did not improve. And so during that time, I have a best friend in Florida. She was getting married, and I traveled away from my home, and I came home and I was greeting my husband and the kids. And 5 minutes after being home, I looked at my husband. I said, "It's the house. It's mold." I felt different, you know, after being out of my home for a week and then coming back home. And it was just strange things. So that's when we started looking at mold. And that was extremely overwhelming because we had spent everything we had plus some treating Lyme. And now I was being told that I, you know, have to leave my house or burn it down or, you know, do some major remediation. And it felt extremely hopeless. So in the spring, summertime, I moved the family out to a tent in the backyard. I got to the point where my kidneys were showing signs of failure. I was having seizure-like episodes, migraines that would last for months, just episodes of like psychosis almost. I mean, it was really, really bizarre and very scary. And then I would get out to the tent and I would feel better. And I would think to myself, like, this is crazy. And that mold does not do this. This is insane. I'm crazy. And then I'd go back to the house and it would start again. And then I did this multiple times. I'd go back out to the tent and be out there for a couple of days and feel different and think, I'm crazy. You know, I don't think I'm crazy now. So
yeah, very emotional, I'm sure. Right. And then, you know, your husband and your children are fine, right? Like they're not having these, I know that they did have some issues, but for the most part, right? Like the severity of your symptoms that you were dealing from. And so I could imagine, like, we do think that we're crazy and we're losing our mind and, you know, people are judging us and looking at us. It's hard.
It was a little weird. And I know that we had friends and family that were just like, what? And that was, okay. And the kids did, they didn't seem to be affected like I did, but I was aware that, you know, my body knew something was going on in this home. So, and not to jump way ahead, but you know, once we did get out of mold, we started to see changes in the children. For example, the kids, all three of my kids always had eczema. And I thought, well, it's hereditary. It's not. we've never had eczema again since being out of mold. So certain things kind of fell away from the rest of the family. So we were all affected, but it was definitely me. So we lived in a tent for a few months, as long as Minnesota weather would allow. And I was very desperate and out of money. And so I started reaching out to professionals in the industry. Michael Pinto of Wonder Makers Environmental, he's just got to be one of the kindest men in the world. He is an author. He's an educator in the industry. And I wrote him an email at like 2 a.m. one night from the tent and inquiring about a book that he had. It was a textbook. He responded 8 hours later and then sent me a free textbook. And I read it cover to cover from the tent, but I read everything on mold remediation, indoor air quality, mold remediation. And what I very, very quickly learned was that the industry was unregulated. There was a great need for education. The professionals I hired didn't know what mycotoxins were. And I said to my husband about 2 weeks into reading, I said, I'm talking over these people's heads. And he said, well, you're really smart. And I said, thank you. But, you know, I shouldn't be. And it's scary. And I think a lot of Lyme patients can agree with this is, when you're going to a doctor and they don't understand what's wrong with you and you're so desperate for their expertise and help, but they don't know, it's really scary. It's a very vulnerable place. And that's how I felt. And so, long story short, we remediated the house. We made a lot of mistakes in that process and I got very sick, but we eventually got the house to a place where I could be in it. And I learned really a lot. And so I forced my way into the industry. And so I've worked in the industry for the past few years as an advocate, an educator. You know, I was pre-med before I got sick. And so I'm very, I love the sciences. So my passion is really being a connector of people. I am not an expert in any one thing. I have nothing profound to share with anybody. I'm a connector of people. So I really love connecting indoor environmentalists with doctors that are treating patients and homeowners. And I really have a passion for empowering people by educating them because, and your listeners know this, treating Lyme is so financially exhaustive and it stinks because there's no insurance policies that cover this, that cover these treatments. And then you throw mold into it. Oh my goodness. You have to diagnose your home, heal your home, diagnose your body, heal your body. And it's all out of pocket. And so
it's almost like a double whammy, right?
Oh,
like, and that's why I'm thankful I've never did deal with it, but it is, you know, like you said, so many people are just not even aware are super educated on Lyme disease, right? And so many more so on the whole mold aspect of it. And like me, I it's not my wheelhouse, right? And so I know that it's a huge topic for a lot of people. And so I'm loving always learning from you.
Well, and I would tell anybody, if you suspect you have Lyme disease, or if you have Lyme disease, rule mold out first, because what mold and mycotoxins will do is they suppress your immune system and it causes an inflammatory response. And so I think that I had Lyme disease for 20 years undiagnosed and I lived with it. And then I moved into mold. It suppressed my immune system and the Lyme came forward. But treating Lyme while living in mold is like trying to rebuild a house that's still on fire. And I will tell you that it's not obvious. And if you have visible mold in your house, cool, that's a great place to start. But the majority of mold is very hidden. I think I had, you know, 2 square inches of visible mold in my house and we had really a lot of hidden mold. So if you're entering, you know, if you're on a health journey and maybe you're considering, do I have Lyme? Is this autoimmune? Look at your environment first, because if you don't start with a firm foundation for healing, you're going to be, you know, exhausting your resources. So
yeah,
super important.
And I'm glad that you brought that up because, you know, I've had many different practitioners on my show over the years and periodically I will ask them that question. So is there an order? Do we need to treat Lyme first, mold second, mold first, Lyme second, together? And it's so fascinating to hear all the different answers.
And
it
I
really
can't,
is.
Yeah, well, and I
and
can't
so my
speak,
thoughts
yeah.
are too, like not knowing anything about mold, just my personal thoughts on it are you either treat it first or you treat it in conjunction is what I feel. But if you are only treating Lyme, like you said, and you're living in it or it's in your body, I feel like you're just flushing money down the toilet because you've got to get rid of that mold.
Well, I can't speak to, I'm not a doctor. And so I don't know the order of operations when you're treating somebody with past mold exposure.
A lot of the doctors don't either, Andy.
Trust me, I know this, unfortunately. But, you know, if you're living in an unhealthy environment, you're not going to heal from anything. So, and it's not just Lyme. If you're battling cancer, oh my gosh, if you're battling cancer, please look at your home. Some of these mycotoxins, and I'll get into what those are known carcinogenics, neurotoxins, hepatotoxins, nephrotoxins. Anybody that I love that is battling cancer, I'm like, oh gosh, make sure you're not living in mold, because that can be such a hindrance to your health. So we take environmental factors for granted. And my hope is that one day every healthcare provider, and I don't care what kind of medicine they practice, well, I'm talking mental health, primary care providers, functional naturopaths, any and all of them, they should be asking, what do you eat? You know, what's your lifestyle like? And are you being, are you being exposed to a water damaged building? There's so many things in our environment that can be a hindrance to health. So we need to start looking at those things and having realistic, protocols for those things.
Yeah, no, I agree. We definitely need more awareness about it and people to actually take it serious. Right. And I think that maybe the reason that people don't is because, you know, like kind of what you lived through it. And I know that your children, you know, did have symptoms, hindsight, right. That went away. But when you're having two people living in a home and one is sick from it and one is not, like, it leads to a lot of disbelief from a lot of people, right? Like, invisible illnesses are very misjudged by the outside, you know, people. And it's sad, but it's a reality. Yeah. And I just think that we need more compassion when it comes to stuff like this.
Well, and that's, thank you for bringing that up, because that, I talk to families, I talk to people all over the globe, and I have never talked to a family where everybody was sick in the home and experiencing these things the same way. And there's a very good reason for this, by the way. And there's a lot of reasons, actually. There's genetic predisposition. They've seen gender play a role, previous exposure, underlying conditions, folks with autoimmune disorders, Lyme disease. And so it's not that it's okay for other people to live in these things. It's just that their toxic bucket is not full yet. So my bucket's full. So if you put a drop in, it's going to spill over. My husband, his is pretty low. And I think this is really important to understand, because the previous homeowner of my house, they were here, they built the house, they're here 20 years, and the husband sold the house after his wife died. She was 56. She was diagnosed with liver and lung cancer in January. She was dead by June, very aggressive. And one of the mycotoxins that we found in the air in my home is called aflatoxin. And I don't, if you Google aflatoxin, you will find a million sources that say it is the most known potent carcinogen known to man, and it is connected with the cancers that the previous homeowner died of. Wow. So I'm a woman of faith, and I thank God for my hypersensitivity, because we moved into this house and it's kind of like having a sixth sense. And it was, you know, my body knew something was amiss. And so I suspect that had nobody been hypersensitive in this home, we would have continued living here without knowing. And I don't know what that would look like, but they're connecting mycotoxin exposure to dementia, Alzheimer's, cancers, you know, all of these things. And so I'm very grateful. But again, not everybody is affected the same. And that is very, very normal. That is par for course. And if you do have a hypersensitive loved one, thank them for being the walking, you know, yes. air quality, you know.
So it's, as much of a nightmare as this mole journey and this home for you has been, and living in a tent with your children, like, you've been through so much, Angie, over the years that I've known you. Is it really is a blessing, right? Like, if you yeah. were not sensitive to it, and, you know, we're going to talk a little bit of it later on in the show for sure, because so much of our journeys really can be defined, you know, make it or break it, by our mindset and our Amen. Thoughts. And yeah. so we truly, when I say that Lyme disease was one of my biggest blessings in life, I truly mean it. And I know it's hard for people yes. to understand that when they're going through this journey, right? So let's pause for a moment. I want to back up just a second, because I'm sure, like myself, there are many listeners who really don't have a clue what you're even talking about right now. So let's Thank break you. It down simple, right? Because yeah. you're way above our heads. So what is mold? What is a mycotoxin, what? Right?
I like, love
is
this.
There
Stop
a difference?
It.
So yes. break it. Let's start with the baby steps, right? Let's break it down yeah. to us.
So Tanya knows that I love fungi. I'm a mycology enthusiast. I love mushrooms. And I've loved fungi and mushrooms long before I got sick. So I love this topic because people really, really try to simplify mold. And fungi is incredible. And there is just, it has incredible capabilities. And so to simplify such a diverse and an amazing organism is laughable. But mold is in the fungi kingdom, of course, just like mushrooms are. And mold is a very important part of our world. Mold works as a decomposer, right? It's and when people say, well, mold is everywhere, you're not wrong. Mold spores are in our ambient air. This is healthy. This is part of our natural world. Unless you're like in a sterile, you know, surgical clean room, you're always going to have mold spores in the air. Mold spores are the organism's sexual reproductive system. So a mold spore can find a source of moisture and, you know, experience mold growth. Life continues. Okay. So you will always have mold spores in your home and in the air, and that's okay. But you should never have active mold growth anywhere within the building envelope. Doesn't matter if it's in the attic, if it's behind a wall, if it's in the basement, you should not have mold growth or water damage anywhere within the home. And that's when it becomes problematic. So mold acts very differently out in nature, right? So out in nature, it's got sunlight and airflow and streams of water, and it's in its natural habitat. Now, where mold becomes problematic is when it feels threatened. And when you put mold in a home in an unnatural habitat, it's going to feel threatened, and it's going to release something called a mycotoxin. A mycotoxin is a secondary metabolite of mold. So quick science lesson, a primary metabolite is produced by an organism, but from a life-sustaining process. And please excuse my analogy here. My kids love it, but it's the best way for me to explain it. When you smell a musty odor, what you're smelling is called a microbial volatile organic compound, or an MVOC. That's the musty odor that you're smelling. It is, again, a primary metabolite. It's also known as mold farts. So they're eating and they're digesting and they're releasing this gas, right? So just like us, we eat, we digest our food, we get gassy. So primary metabolite. A secondary metabolite is a metabolite that's rendered from a non-life-sustaining process. So it is the mold's defense mechanism. It is its weapon, okay? So not all mold is toxigenic, and what makes a mold toxigenic is its ability to produce this secondary metabolite. Mold spores are not toxic, okay? They're allergenic. but they're not toxic. It is a secondary metabolite, these mycotoxins that are super, they're super, 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 super small. And this, it's important to understand what it means for them to be small is because they're so small, they reach our alveoli in our lungs. And it is in our alveoli that a gas exchange occurs. So they are able to enter our bloodstream. And then that's why they cause systematic damage, right? That's why you'll see people affected by mold in very different ways. Mold can feel threatened and release this mycotoxin for a lot of reasons. Maybe it's drying out. Maybe somebody's spraying bleach on it. Maybe you got all this, you know, Wi-Fi and EMFs and all of these things. Maybe the mold is being disturbed through remediation, whatever it may be. But that is, it's mycotoxins that make folks sick.
So does that, and that was a great description. Thank you. You broke it down very well. I'm assuming it was your children you're having to explain this to, right? That's why you got really good at breaking it down very clearly. So let me understand this correctly. So you got the primary metabolite and then the secondary. So is the primary the actual physical mold that you would see if you saw some mold up in the corner on a vent or something like that? Is that what is considered primary? And maybe it's not dangerous or releasing mycotoxins?
So primary metabolite is a metabolite produced by that organism. So, I mean, active mold growth anywhere within the home is actionable. And what I mean by that is it should not be there and it warrants, you know, remedial
efforts. Because like you said, it's not in their ecosystem, right? Out in the world, right? And so we're suppressing it within the home so it feels threatened. So any of these little mold spots that you see can become dangerous because they're in an environment that they're not supposed to be.
Also, yes. And I think it's important here. Yes, I'm the mold queen and I talk about mycotoxins, but it's not just these things that make folks sick. Don't miss the forest for the trees. A water damaged home is going to render a whole host of biological contaminants, mold, their metabolites, gram negative bacteria, you know, actinomycetes, a variety of different contaminants. So, water or moisture is at the nucleus of all of these things. And that's important to understand because sometimes when people kind of dive into this process and they're like, oh, I got mold in my house, and they kind of get too hyper-focused and miss the forest for the trees. Find the moisture issues, mitigate them. And if you identify moisture issues within the home, you're going to inadvertently find these biological contaminants. You should be, a healthy home should be free of water damaged building material. It should have proper ventilation. You know, you should keep your homes clutter free and dust free. If somebody could give that memo to my children, that would be wonderful. So there's a lot that goes into a healthy home environment. And I will tell anybody listening to this, if you're feeling overwhelmed by mold, I get it, but you're not going to ever heal your home overnight and you'll never heal your body overnight, but a step in the right direction is a step in the right direction. So just because, you know, by eating vegetables and taking your supplements and exercising one day, it's not going to fix you overnight. And right. Same goes for your home. So, you know, start with identifying moisture issues and, you know, don't miss the forest for the trees.
Right. No. And that's very good advice because I know that even just with Lyme, right? Like we get so desperate that we want to throw everything in the kitchen sink at it. Anytime you start a protocol, you hear from somebody else, oh, this worked for me. Oh, let me do that. It is very overwhelming. You really need to look at it as, you know, kind of a job. Let's start a list on what's the number one priority that I need to do. And I like that you broke that down that way, Andy. Find the moisture. Find where the moisture is coming from, right? And like you said, we can't, you know, what is the phrase? Rome wasn't built overnight or whatever, right? And that's kind of the way that it is. Yes, we want you out of it. Yes, we want the mold gone, but let's get to the root of the problem, right? Just like when you're treating Lyme disease, if you don't get to the root of what caused your body to break down and allow the pathogens in, you're never going to either fully get well or stay well. And so that's kind of the same thing with mold. We've got to find where it's coming from. The moisture, it sounds like, is the ticket.
And I think it's really important to understand, too, that if you're hypersensitive, you're hypersensitive. And there, I'm telling you, it's really hard to find a perfect home. I don't know if one exists. And so I've seen a lot of families, you know, walk away from homes and, you know, thinking that the issue was just unfixable or very, very large. And sometimes it is. Absolutely. There's times when it's not worth, you know, the efforts, when the home is very problematic. But then they quickly learn that, you know, it's really hard. I have a very dear friend right now that's bouncing from rental to rental to rental and trying to find a builder to build them a house. And she left a home because they thought that was the right thing to do. And now she's wondering if that was the right decision. So, and the other thing to understand too, is I will always have my hypersensitivity. Traveling's hard for me. I still do it, but it's hard to be in other people's houses. And so I think sometimes, again, going back on what you said, Tanya, is people throw everything at it. And then they're just like expecting it to be in the rearview mirror, like, we'll recover from this later. And then they're like, oh, this is our life now. So when you're entering into the rabbit hole that is mold, my biggest piece of advice is to think before you spend, be realistic, be pragmatic, and do not lead your decision-making with fear. We do not make good decisions when we're living in a state of fight or flight. And by the way, mycotoxins do that to our brains. It's part of what they do. And so you have to really think through your decisions. And I'll tell you, from somebody that did it, navigating these things with no resources is not a lot of fun.
Yeah, navigating anything without resources is not a lot of fun, right?
Right.
So I think this just popped into my head, and so I'm going to go ahead and just kind of throw it out there, because you were talking about, you know, some people just give up and move, and maybe that's the right option, right? Like, everybody's scenario is different, you know, just like treating Lyme disease, everybody is going to get well a different way, right? There's certain foundations, but it's all alike. So I hear this a lot in the community of people that, let's just take, for example, you're renting a home, right? And it's got mold in it. You've discovered it. You're moving. Okay. Well, everything in your home has been exposed to this mold. So do people throw everything away? Are there certain things that you can clean? What can you clean? What is safe to bring with you? Mm-hmm. And I think that would be something a lot of the listeners would love to know about.
That is a wonderful question, and one that I get often. And I will tell you up front that if you ask 10 different people this question, you will get 10 different answers.
And I'm glad that you said that, because we always do, right? Just like with a practitioner that's treating us for Lyme or mold, you're going to get different insights from each practitioner. Neither one of us are practitioners, Andy, but we've lived the journey. We've learned things the hard way. And I oftentimes think, coming from experience and your personal journey, I don't know, a lot of it makes a lot more sense than some of these doctors do. So I always, whenever I have questions about mold, I take what you say as gospel, because you've lived it. And that's
why
I called you the mold queen.
Thank you. I'm always learning, there's so much to learn, but the topic of contents is personal. And in general, one person's path forward to healing might look really different from another person's path to healing. And when I'm consulting with families like my own, I really try to ascertain, like, where are your strengths and where are your needs? Some people, I'm really lucky, and this is not common. I have a spouse that has always believed me, has always supported me. If my husband came home today and I said, babe, we need to burn down the house, he'd be like, where's the matches? And that can be a huge hindrance in these. And then that's a whole nother topic, man. That's another podcast interview. But also, some people, the hindrance is financial. And so some people can't afford to just replace everything. And having that extremist kind of thinking, I think, is very dangerous. And what it did for me is made me feel hopeless and want to it made me feel hopeless. And so you don't have to get rid of everything. This is my personal opinion. Mycotoxins, they're sticky in nature, so they'll stick to surfaces. An alkaline cleaner, I don't have a recommendation for a certain product, but an alkaline cleaner has been shown to be effective. My current line of work, I work for a lab called Respirary Labs. We offer mycotoxin air and surface testing. And this is a whole nother story, but I began working with this lab and interested in their technology after their mycotoxin air test, the EMEA, identified an issue in my home that no other test did. So I spent a year chasing these folks down and begging them to hire me, and they did. That's where I'm at now. But working in the lab, I get to learn a lot of different things. And one thing I've learned is that mycotoxins typically won't travel far from the source of water damage or mold growth. And they're also not going to just magically like soak into a surface. So if it's non-porous, you can absolutely clean those things. Use microfibers, whatever cleaner you want to use, clean it to the best of your ability. Beds are a good one to replace. Mattresses, absolutely a good thing to, if you're not sure, just replace it. I made that mistake. We replaced the kids' beds, not ours, because we couldn't afford to. And when we finally did, I became aware that it was contaminated. So contents are personal because some people can't afford to just replace things. And also, sometimes people will, and then they'll buy something cheap, like a cheap new couch or cheap new furniture, and then it's off-gassing a bunch of VOCs.
Getting rid of one problem for another.
Yeah. But also, you know, we've remediated our home 7 different times, and we got rid of a lot of stuff the first and second remediation. And then I was just like, forget it, we're cleaning it. So I'm a big fan of trying to clean something before throwing it out. Some people are very, very, very sensitive. And so what works for me, or what worked for me, might not work for all, but I think it's worth trying to clean something. For sentimental things like scrapbooks or pictures or journals, things like that. I've got a lot of those things. I'm a mom. I put them in plastic bins, nothing in cardboard. Please don't store stuff in cardboard, especially in the basement. Put those things in sealed bins and put them somewhere safe. I don't know. I don't know how to clean those things. I have a lot of those things. But if you're not sure on how to clean it and you're like, yep, I'm keeping this, put it in a bin. Contents weigh us down. So if you're navigating mold, the first thing that I would tell you to do is go through your contents and ask yourself, is this valuable to me? Is it sentimental? Is it valuable? Do I need it? Does it bring me joy? If it doesn't, get rid of it. And then you can decide, yep, we're going to clean this. We're going to replace this. We're going to pack this away. But before you just get rid of everything, really think through it.
Yeah, because I think that's good advice, because, you know, these support groups online, they're fabulous. They are. But you can get a lot of mixed information. You get people that, you know, are just finding out about this thing. They've been sick for so many years. I got to get rid of everything and move. And so that's why I'm thankful that you kind of broke that down easier, right? Like, what is important? Start with that. If it's easy for you to get rid of it. And then the other things, start cleaning. So when you say that these mycotoxins, they don't go far. So let me ask you this example. Let's say you have a 2-story home, your bedrooms are upstairs, and the water damage and the mold is all the way down in your basement.
That's a good question.
Is your mattress in your bedroom safe?
Ooh, okay. That's a loaded question. So let me tell you what I do know. Air in a home moves, and because air moves, so do contaminants. I know I'm going to sound like I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth here. So air moves from areas of high pressure to low pressure. It's called the stack effect. And this is important because some people say, well, we have mold in our basement. I never go down there. It's very scary. Whew. All that air comes up. So all the air from your basement comes up, again, through pressure differentials, the stack effect, through your HVAC system, all of those things. So if you're looking at your home and you have a lot of things to fix, start with your basement. That's so important. I don't know how to answer that question, Tanya, because I don't have hard science, right? On, yep, this was definitely contaminated. We had mold throughout our entire house. It was in the basement, it was in the attic. And then this previous issue, this last one that we found, which was done, we found it through this respirare. It was very, very hidden mold. I felt sick. I felt very sick in my bedroom, nowhere else.
I remember that. Yeah. That was a long journey. Yeah.
And again, this was our last hurrah. And I mean, I quit staying in that room and I could sleep across the hall in the kids' room and feel very good. Now I know I'm in mold because I'm breathing in mycotoxins, which by the way, that's why it's important to test the air for mycotoxins. And so the thought, because I had to really relearn, like, mycotoxins don't travel far from the water damage. Air moves, so do contaminants. But that line of thinking made sense to me because I'm telling you, I felt off, very unwell in my bedroom, but not across the hall in the kids' room. And I've tested the air in both of those rooms, and it was our room that was very problematic. So there's a lot of factors when it comes to contents, but you know, I always try to lead with being very cognizant of resources. Try cleaning it. And if you still feel like it's problematic, if it's bringing you a lot of anxiety or you think you're being exposed, then replace it. But I think it's good to, and mattresses, just replace them. Replace the mattress, but get a low VOC, Green Guard Gold certified, you know.
Love it. So now talking about testing. So let's talk about testing for a minute. And I want to talk about personal, like testing it in our body, right? And then in our home. I don't know if you want to start with one or the other. And then, of course, I'm going to put you on the spot, Andy. If we can maybe in an amazing world, this is the test I recommend for you and the test I recommend for your home, right? It's, yep. This is the the king of kings, right?
Got it. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If it is not in my budget, it just isn't. I mean, you can only squeeze from where you can squeeze from.
Right.
And what would be your secondary, right? And again, we know, for example, if you want an accurate Lyme testing, do not go to your primary doctor and have them run the Western blot or whatever it may be, right? We need to go to Armin Labs, Igenix, Gallet, you know, a reputable lab. Same thing, I'm sure, with mold. Not everybody can afford that. So maybe sometimes they start with their primary. So if you can break out in two categories for us, that would be super helpful.
Okay. Let's see if I can do this. Without a very long lecture. So first and foremost, I'm not a healthcare provider, and I will be very candid and tell you I have yet to see a mold literate doctor, not because I don't see value in it. We are just haven't been able to afford that with fixing our home. With that said, in the body, there's a lot of tests, and talking to all the doctors that I do across the globe, it's a lot of different opinions on, well, this test is great, this test is crap, this test is great. So some doctors, a lot of doctors use urine testing. I was reading recently in a mycotoxin textbook that testing the urine for lipophilic toxins. And by the way, a lot of these mycotoxins are lipophilic. That means they love fat. They're hydrophobic, they're lipophilic. And lipophilic toxins are important to look at because they can get into our mucosa and our pulmonary mucosa into our gut, right? They can cross those membranes. But testing the body for a hydrophobic and lipophilic toxin in the urine doesn't make sense. But a lot of doctors will do that. For folks that are using urine tests, I would say use it as a starting point. And again, I'm not a doctor. I want to make that really, really clear.
Yes.
Use it as a starting point and don't let these data points make you spiral. Okay. We have mycotoxins in our food, especially in the US. We're keeping corn and wheat in silos. Coffee's moldy. I mean, we have a lot of mycotoxins in our food. And so if they're in your urine, that means your body is carrying them out. So I'm going to be really honest and say I'd be more shocked if we were to give everybody a mycotoxin urine test. I'd be really shocked to see somebody that had none in their urine. None. That would be concerning to me because I'd be like, Yeah.
That would be from just an ordinary person, not sick, yes, just because we're trying to survive in a toxic world.
Well, I would, and again, I'm not a doctor, but I would expect somebody that had like zero levels of mycotoxins in their urine to be very sick, because are they hanging on to them? So if you are looking at mycotoxins in your urine, that is what your body has successfully eliminated. And so use it as a starting point, and then expect, if your doctor puts you on a detox protocol, so you're calling these toxins out and you're binding them, you're going to see those levels go up. If you are going to do a mycotoxin urine test, stay consistent with the lab you're using, because different labs are going to use different lab analyses, mass spec or ELISA, whatever it may be. So stay consistent with the lab that you're using. And again, data points aren't gospel. Okay. There's limitations, strengths and limitations to each and every test, whether it's somatic in your body or in the environment. So use it as a piece to the puzzle. Okay. And same goes for environmental testing. So there's also a genetic test folks can do. I think it's the HLA. There's a blood test that looks, my Mycolab, Dr. Andrew Campbell, looks for antibodies in the blood. There's a number of tests, but certain doctors have different ways of diagnosing things and then kind of benchmarking the patient's progress. I am not well versed in that. So find a good mold literate doctor, find somebody that, that you can work well with. Whew, okay. Testing your home. Now I want to start this by saying, and making very clear, I'm in this industry. I sell mycotoxin air and surface testing for respiratory labs. This technology saved my life. I think it's going to save the industry. However, when people call and ask me, Andy, I need to test my home for mold, I ask them a ton of questions before recommending any one test. And okay, and I'm a salesperson for respiratory labs. So different tests are going to tell you different things. Every test is going to have strengths, limitations, and you have to look at the sample analysis. The sample collection was, are you looking at dust? Are you looking at air? What is being done in the lab? Are they using quantitative PCR? Are they using mass spec? Are they using ELISA, microscopy? All of those have limitations. And so, and I'm telling, if you hear anything out of this podcast interview, hear this. People take these data points as gospel, without understanding all the steps in the process and the strengths and limitations. And this is dangerous, because I've seen people walk away from homes based on, based on a data point. So, you know, for example, dust sampling, it can be a good understanding of everything that's could possibly be going on in the home, but it's often amplified and then it puts too much focus on the dust. So whole nother conversation. I'm not a terrible fan of dust sampling simply because I've seen people get taken advantage of by predatory companies that say, gosh, Tanya, you have really scary stuff in your home, you know, according to this dust sample. And then they sell them like $30,000 cleaning protocols.
Yeah. And unfortunately, in the world that we live in, when we're vulnerable, right, with
right,
our health
absolutely.
And our finances,
yes.
We tend to get taken advantage of. And
so,
it makes me sick to my stomach. And so I'm glad that you mentioned that, right? So that could be a good starting point, right? They're saying
yes.
All this stuff is in the dust because it might not be the best choice
right.
of testing.
And I mean, I could literally spend an hour on talking about ERMI and HERTSMI and dust testing in general and the dangers in it. But if you want to have that conversation and you're listening, reach out and I'll share that information with you. If you are, because we're talking about health, if you are concerned about the health of your home about, and by the way, we don't walk around licking walls. We're not eating dust. I know I'm in mold because of the air I'm breathing. So if you're listening to this and you say, gosh, am I being affected by mold in my home? I'm concerned about my health. Test the air for mycotoxins. That's my go-to. And I'm not just saying that because I work for Respiratory Labs. I truly and sincerely believe that it's a good starting point. If you have detectable levels, and if you order a do-it-yourself test to Respiratory Labs, which you can do, by the way, and you have detectable levels, you get a free 15-minute consult with me. And I'm going to tell you, well, you have detectable levels. We got to figure out what's going on. You have to figure out where this water damage is. You got to find an inspector. But a lot of times what people do is they're doing these tests and then they're left to draw conclusions. Mold spores do not make us sick. Presence of DNA fragments of a toxigenic mold that may or may not produce mycotoxins is not going to give you the answers that you need. You're going to be drawing conclusions. Don't draw conclusions from, you know, these tests that aren't, you know, answering your question. If you're concerned about the health of your home, test here for mycotoxins. So anybody can go to Respirare. Respirare is Italian, by the way. It means to breathe.
Yes, I love the way you say it. And listeners, you know, as always, we'll have any of the information or links that Andy's going to share with us in the description of this episode so you can find it.
Yes. So
air test. Yeah. That's where we want to go. Okay. So now what pops into my head, being very uneducated about mold and all the stuff that you're talking about, all I've ever heard of are Petri dishes. Let's go buy some Petri dishes and sit them around your house. What is that testing? Is that testing the air?
It's very inexpensive, and I always look at that. I look at the strengths, limitations, and weigh it against the cost, and sometimes it's a starting point, but it's a very rudimentary data point. There are going to be mold spores in the air. You are going to be left gravity, right? Those mold spores are going to fall on the plate, and then you have to understand that some mold prefers different food. It prefers different media. So what's going to grow on that plate is what that media caters to. So it's a good starting point, and it's inexpensive and it's interesting, but you can't really fully ascertain if there is an issue. But I like them because they're inexpensive, and it might lead somebody to do further investigation.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So it's inexpensive, people can do it and put it in their house. Is there a high chance of being taken advantage of by doing these Petri dish testing, if somebody is looking at, oh, yes, you have mold, you have this, you have that?
Really good question.
Sometimes maybe doing the lesser inexpensive might actually turn out to trying to cost you more money, right? Because we don't really know what we're looking at. And that's why it sounds like it's just really hard and overwhelming, this whole mold thing.
That's a good question. So let me make it really brief and say that there is no magic cure. So if you are doing these mold Petri dishes and then this company is like, we have this bomb and we're going to bomb your house. And that is, I've seen that connected to companies that do these tests. So to make it very simple, mold remediation, if you have mold in your home, you need to do two things. You have to identify that moisture issue and mitigate it. Is it a grading issue? Is it an ongoing leak? Is it a past leak? Is it a humidity issue? And then mold affected building material, please hear me on this, needs to be removed while under containment and negative air pressure. It's got to be removed. There's no spray. There's no magic bomb or, you know, cleaning the house of all the dust. That's great. Small particulate cleaning, solid effort. But if there's an active source of mold that's being missed, you're going to be putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound. And that's where that, again, not to get into it, that's what I'm seeing be done with dust testing, is you have these companies come in and go, yeah, Tanya, oh, you're so right. You should be afraid of this. And then these people spend $30,000 on a cleaning protocol. And that's on the low end, by the way. And then they're still sick because they didn't get to the source. So there is no magical cure for mold. You have to remove the active mold growth, and you have to do it under containment, negative air pressure. If you don't, 1 square inch of mold can hold 1 million mold spores. So when you're ripping it out, guess what happens? Those mold spores are going flying, and then they can find any source of moisture and continue, you know, that spread. So containment, negative air pressure, not just important for your health, but you don't really want to have your home overtaken by mold.
Right. Okay. So now that leads me to come up with a couple of other questions, right? So obviously, a lot of times it's very easy to get mold in your shower, right? It's very, it's very humid in there. And so that is okay to clean, correct?
Yes.
Like just with the normal cleaner. Okay. So then now let's take it one step further. Let's say up around, you know, the air vent in the bathroom, if there is mold on the actual wall, right? So that would be like, I guess, on the paint underneath, you know, the sheetrock and all of that. Is that safe to clean if there's obviously no visual, actual reason why it's wet other than just being in the shower type of thing? And these sound really basic, but
I don't know, which means probably a lot
of the listeners don't know.
Nope, that's a really good question. If you see mold on a inorganic non-porous substrate, okay, so on your vinyl windows, on your tile, clean it. It's super, super safe to clean that. You don't need bleach. I just use vinegar. You really have to look at it and ask, what is it growing on? Now, the ceiling, I know what you're, it's surface mold on the sheetrock, not, you know, behind it from a water leak. I mean, first and foremost, you have to manage humidity levels. You have to. So after you shower, you should always be running your bathroom fan when you're showering. I leave mine on for a good 45 minutes because I take really hot showers with the door closed. Some people really like to squeegee their showers, but just keeping those things is clean is and dry as you can. But yeah, I just use a microfiber, a little vinegar. I usually have my husband do it just because if I get exposed to mold sometimes.
Yes. Yeah,
but yeah, it doesn't, you don't have to. Let me back up.
We don't want to fear this,
right?
No, it's a natural mold, thing in the environment. Yes.
Mold on a vinyl window. I used to take so many calls. I'm like, that is not the mold you need to be freaking out about. It's the mold in the beneath the window and the wall that I'm concerned about. But again, think to yourself, what is it growing on? What is the substrate? And mold will have these mycelial roots that can infiltrate sheetrock, which is very porous, very organic, or wood, especially soft woods. And those roots, that's important to understand that. But if it's, you know, vinyl windows, they're not going to, it's not going to be rooted. Just keep them dry, keep them clean, take a microfiber to it. You don't need to panic every time. I don't panic every time I see mold and I get very sick from it. I, you know, you have to really think through it.
Yeah. And, you know, so I know I could probably talk to you for hours, Andy, about this, and I'm sure I'm going to have you come back and do an episode 2 in a while. But with that said, talking about panicking. So before we end, can we just talk about, I don't even know how I want to describe it, but you know, this journey, whether it's a Lyme journey or a mold journey or whatever it is, right? Like we don't, first of all, we don't want to live in fear. You know what I mean? Like I was very sick for 13 years with Lyme and I've been 100% well for over 4 years.
Amazing.
But I don't live in a bubble. I go out and do things. I was on, I'm not a very adventurous person, right? But I love the outdoors. And I was out on, don't know what it's called, those little, more advanced than the golf cart, right? But under a car, I don't know, are they 4x4s or raised? I don't know what you call them.
Yeah.
Anyways, you know what I'm talking about. Okay. Yes. So last summer we were out and about, we kind of went down the wrong road and we really couldn't turn around. We kind of had to finish our way through it.
Sure.
And it was brushy. And I looked down and I see 3 ticks on my arm. And what is the first thing we want to do? Panic. We want to go into a PTSD mode, right? And it's so important not to. During our journeys, we learn so many things about our body and how our body responds. Is it responding to something? Just like you, Andy, you know when you're in mold, your body tells you. And so we don't want to have this fear, right? And along these journeys, we also gain many, many tools to put in our toolbox. So I saw that. Of course, we went back, you know, to the house. I took all my clothes off. I showered. I did a tick check. So what did I do? I went ahead and just took a couple double doses of colloidal silver and added some cystis to, you know, just whatever. Yeah. I don't even think the darn things bit me. But for my peace of mind, let me just throw in a couple of things that I have in my toolbox, right? And so kind of with that, this whole journey is very emotional. And so I want to talk about the emotional side of it and also the mindset. You know, our mind is so much more powerful than anybody, I believe, really knows.
Oh, for sure.
And,
I'm really,
you know,
yeah.
There is this saying that, you know, 70, 80% of our immune system resides in our gut, right? We know that. What do you think controls your gut? Your brain?
I would not mean it
mentally, right? Yes. Like literally your brain controls it. That's how powerful it is. So help us shed some light. Give us some encouragement.
Thank you for that prompt, because if I could go back and do anything, I would go into neuroscience. A lot of what I experienced with Lyme and mold was very neurological. And so I found a great interest. And our central nervous system is absolutely attacked by Lyme and mold. So not to get too deep, but mycotoxins, for example, trichothecines, which are used in biowarfare, by the way, their point of action is presynaptic. They absolutely reach the brain parenchyma. And specifically, what these things do is it affects our limbic systems. And our limbic systems is a series of structures in our brain that are associated with sensory input. And so what happens, and this is very common, what a lot of people that live in mold experience anxiety. That was my first symptom. And so what mold does is it puts us into a state of fight or flight. Okay, when we're in a state of fight or flight, we're not in an optimal state for healing, right? We don't sleep. We can be insomniacs. We're not digesting optimally because we're not in that rest and digest state, right? It's kind of like if you had somebody trying to kick down your door and hurt you, are you going to be cleaning your house? No, you're going to be defending. And again, this is why I say never make big decisions when you're in a state of fight or flight or fearful. And so one of the best things for people that are feeling stuck, that maybe they can't afford to test their home right now, maybe they can't afford to hire a doctor, the best thing that you can do for yourself is really focus on your central nervous system and get out of that state of fight or flight, because again, you are not sleeping like you should. You're not regenerating. You're not healing. You're not thinking, because if you're running from a tiger, if you're running from a lion, all that blood's going to your limbs, right? Not your brain. You're not doing any higher thinking. And I, Tanya and I, we're such good friends because we both don't live in fear. And I am a mushroom forager, and which is ironic because I'm literally always, always in the woods. I mean, always, and like in the thick of the woods. I remember the first couple of years I would get anxiety attacks when I'd see a tick. Now our family, we just are always, always checking for ticks. I like to check my husband 3 or 4 times for ticks, even when it's the middle of the winter and there's no ticks around. But I'm just kidding. But it's, you have to live your life, and we'll never live in a world free of mold. We'll never find a perfect house. Leading life with gratitude and not leading your life with fear is so important. And I'm not just saying this to gaslight people. I'm saying this because if you are in a state of fight or flight constantly, that's not a place to be for healing, and you have to just embrace it. And Tanya, I do the same thing. I see a tick on me now. We're good at catching them before they attach. I did find a tiny one on me this year though, like Tanya, tiny. And I don't know how long it was attached for, but I did all my things.
We do what we know to do. Yeah,
I save all my ticks.
That you're good.
If I find them on the dogs or me or the kids, and if they're attached, I save them. I put a date on them and stick them to the fridge. Our friends are probably like, what in the world? But if I need to test the tick, it's easier to test the tick. So, get out there, get outside, get fresh air, get in the woods, and just check for ticks and really take care of your mental health, because it's such a big part of these illnesses. It really is.
So. Yeah. And that's such good words and good advice too, because Andy, we've been there, right? We've been down through the good, the bad, the evil in our personal journeys. And we know that finances are tough. We know that we have a tendency to be taken advantage of. We know like a lot of different things, right? And I think that it's important to know that if you are in a financial bind, right? Like you have no resources, right? There are things that you can do. And like you said, our nervous system, do you have any idea how many free tools there are out there that we can utilize to help reset our nervous system? I share things all the time about our nervous system, our vagus nerve. If you guys want those free tools, please check out my Lyme and Beyond with Tanya Facebook page. There are so many free things out there. We need to grasp onto them and utilize them, right?
Yes.
And so I just think that that's really important to know that there is something we can do. And as we all know, we have to be our own advocate, right? So figure out the tools, figure out what you can do, whether it's with your pocketbook or your mind and your thoughts and sound therapy or whatever it may be. I think the most important thing that we need to always remember is that if you're telling yourself or your thoughts or your words are, this is horrible, I'm never going to get well, I can assure you, you won't, right? We've got to know that we can get well, right?
Right. Yeah. And practice gratitude every day. Just like Tanya, you say that Lyme was the best thing that happened. I'm grateful that I found this house, and it's instilled passion in me and created such a network of wonderful people like you. So practice gratitude and don't lose hope. These illnesses are tough. They're misunderstood. They're isolating, but they are not impossible. You don't need to go bankrupt. And you can get well without going bankrupt or, selling your soul.
There's just some there. Yeah, right. There's just so many different ways. So, Andy, this has really been very enlightening. Like, I have learned so much. I feel a little bit more confident about the aspects around mold, because truly I didn't know many. And I know we talk about it and, we chat all the time, but I just love learning new things. And so thank you so much for just touching on a lot of different topics that I'm sure hopefully the listeners will find beneficial and just super informative. And just always remember, like you said, you can and will get better. This is not our death sentence, right? It's we're put in this. Everything's in God's timing. And I think that we're going through these journeys for a reason. Find the gratitude and the gratefulness in that.
Amen. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, my friend. I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.